Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Okay, good morning. If you could go on a cruise, Charlie, would you do it?
I actually have always wanted to do an Alaskan cruise, so that would be my pick.
Freddie?
If you're asking me if I would do it, yeah, I'd do it.
Adam?
Yeah.
I'm a germaphobe, and I don't want to get sick. So if you're following what's going on in the...
Now is not the time to do it.
The Princess Cruise Line in Japan, is everybody's quarantined. Because of the coronavirus. That would be me. That would be my fear is
that I would have a boat for a month.
I would be, yes. I can't sit still. So, and I know there's like so much to do, and I've talked to people who've had great experiences and they learn how to do Microsoft programming and all this other neat stuff that you wouldn't normally do. And I thought, oh, that sounds really cool, and I want to go fishing in Alaska, but I don't want to be on a boat. So sure. I don't think it's so they're quarantined for 14 days. All right, so here's where we're at. Let's talk about the economy. So big labor market employment number on Friday. We're up 225,000 jobs for January, the Labor Department reported, and it continues this trend of consistent growth in jobs. And it runs counter to the thesis that we have, which is we're seeing increased layoffs. So companies like Zimmer, CNO, Old National, John Deere, and Lyft all have had layoffs. I mean, the numbers keep growing. But what's happening is we're seeing across the board, whether it's hospitality, the service sector, construction, there's been consistent growth. A lot of this has to do with mild weather. We did see the unemployment number tick up to 3.6% from 3.5%, but they're attributing that to more people coming into the labor market. So that is boosting. I think it gives a boost to the economy. We still think, and this is a change from how we started the year, we still think that the Fed will have to lower interest rates this year because of the global slowdown related to the coronavirus and just the impact that's going to have on just overall demand and output. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Freddie. We're going to talk about models today, and then we're going to talk about some income strategies and portfolios. Go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. Going to highlight our core sector series today. Going to start with our sector views, followed by some specific changes that we have. So to start it off, communication services. We're overweight here with wireless demand rising, rollout of 5G, strong ad revenue, and our top holdings in the sector being Facebook and Google. They've had privacy concerns, but the sector as a whole has been able to navigate them fairly effectively. Consumer discretionary and consumer staples, we remain neutral here. We do have a healthy, confident consumer and a historically low unemployment rate. Valuations seem to be fair value, but as Greg said, with quiet labor cutbacks, and then we have a weak manufacturing index that could bleed into the labor market, we remain neutral here despite the consumer confidence. On energy, we're neutral energy. We don't believe geopolitical tensions can be classified as a true catalyst, but at such a deep discount, we do want to remain neutral here. On financials, we remain overweight, specifically on the banking sector, which we think will outperform with continued consumer spending across credit cards and homes, and they're also still the cheapest sector in the S&P. Healthcare has quite a few catalysts, so we're overweight here. You have your aging population, M&A spike, healthy balance sheets, and we had a large pullback last year due to major legislative changes that seem to have a low percentage of execution right now. We do expect volatility here heading into elections though. We're underweight both real estate and utilities. We've seen rallies here with the low interest rates, so we don't like the valuation of these sectors currently. And then finally, technology, we continue to be overweight with cloud growth not appearing to slow down. And Apple and Microsoft continuing to push to all-time highs. But in terms of specific changes, We get a little more granular when it comes to specific sectors. So in our tech position, we like ticker IGV. This is the iShares Expanded Tech Sector ETF. So what this does is offer us exposure to high growth software companies that we like, such as Adobe, Salesforce, Oracle, and Intuit, which are a lot of our top ideas that we have in our focused growth model. And it also helps us provide a little bit of diversification away from tech's core holdings, which are Microsoft and Apple. And then to shift over to our core series, given the theme is income, we're planning on growing the income in this series through an increase in our dividend ETF, which is Schwab D. So our growth ETF currently makes up the majority of our large cap exposure. But Schwab D with a dividend yield of close to 3%, compare that to the S&P at 1.75. I mean, this is among high quality large cap US dividend stocks, so we're looking to increase our position here across all of the models in this series. So that's models for the week. I'll shift it over to Adam.
You want me to take it first? Yeah, all right, let me unpack this income. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about strategies to earn income in portfolios. And the context for this is if you go back to the mid-90s, so 1996, a single A-rated corporate bond would yield about 7.5%. So you put a portfolio together, you get 7.5%. So on $1 million portfolio, that's about $75,000 of income. That the primary purpose for a portfolio manager is that allows the portfolio manager to reposition the portfolio and invest in securities without having to sell part of the portfolio and potentially incur tax consequences. So it's an important piece of portfolio management. So today we're talking about what, 265, so call it 2.5% on the ag, $25,000, that's a third of what we used to earn. And that's not enough to move the portfolio around. And so it's a real challenge from a portfolio management standpoint is how do you get income into a portfolio and be able to manage it in a market that's not giving us a lot of income. So we wanted to kind of provide a context for what that is today and then provide some strategies. And we may have to do this in two parts given the time frame. So let me start out with just the basics. And Freddie hit on it. If we don't look to stocks for income, we look to bonds. So the bond market yields about a 265 right now, and that's just the investment grade aggregate. But compare that to the S&P 500, which is what, a 165?
Yeah.
So the distance between what you earn in stocks and what you earn in bonds right now is really tight by historic standards. So first, let's explore the unlevered piece of the market. So you can do this either through leverage or through unlevered strategies. So the unlevered strategies would be just investing in an actively managed bond fund like PIMCO Total Return or a passive strategy like the iShares Core US Aggregate, which replicates the Barclays Aggregate, the Bloomberg, what is it now? It's the Spider Bloomberg's Barclays Aggregate Index.
Yeah.
So something like that. And then on the bond side, a bond portfolio would yield about what, a 546, Charlie? 545, something in there?
On a high yield?
High yield?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have said high yield. That's kind of important.
Yeah, much different than investment grade.
It's Monday. Monday. Sorry about that. So just drawing the contrast between investment grade and high yield, there's a tendency that, hey, I'll go out the risk curve and I can earn a little bit more yield if I go down in quality. And so let me invest a part of the portfolio in high yield securities so I can now get, 5.5%. What would you say to that, Charlie?
Right now, you talked about just the difference between the yield between the S&P 500 and investment grade, how it's really tight right now. The same rule applies to investment grade to high yield. So high yield is an area where you can get additional income for added risk, but that additional income right now is at pretty tight levels.
Okay.
If I could chime in that same regard, we're talking unlevered funds. One thing to be cognizant of is that durations of both the high yield index and the ag have drifted out quite a bit since Greg was talking about, 15 years ago. You're talking the ag is 6 years. Yes, the income's coming down and you're taking on more interest rate risk.
So why is that? Why did the duration extend so much?
It's two part. Well, coupons are obviously coming down as yields come down. So that's one piece. The other piece is that treasuries are now becoming a larger piece of the ag. Over 60% of the ag now is treasuries.
And then there's just more 30-year issuance.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at corporations, what should you do right now? You should term out your debt.
Yeah.
Should refinance out 30 years and at a cost of 4%.
Historically low coupons, at least recently.
Right, it's a no-brainer. So going back to 1996, I think the ag had a duration of 4.5 or 4.7 years. I mean, it was below five. And you're saying it's at 6 years now?
6 years now.
So investors, to earn a lower rate of return investing in investment-grade securities, have to take on more inherent risk just because the extension that already is embedded in the ETF, the maturity extension's already there. All right, so if we move past bonds, by the way, have a contractual obligations to pay. As we move into equity securities, those are no longer contractual obligations. Those are quarterly by the whim of the board. So let's talk about preferred stocks for a second. So there's several strategies to invest in equities other than just common stocks. Preferreds are one. What else we got? Utilities,
REITs.
REITs. Anything else you'd throw in there?
I mean, you can look at some of the staples. I mean, you know, your cigarette companies pay a pretty large dividend.
Yep.
There's specific dividend strategies.
Okay. And then there's MLPs also on the energy side. So on the utility side, you could invest in a utility stock. And utilities right now, I looked at the Vanguard Utility Index ETF, 2.66 yield. So we have seen quite the run in dividend, where we would normally go to earn a higher rate of income in the equity space. 266 compares with what was the dividend?
295 on the Schwab D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you're getting a diversified portfolio. The REIT index is a 3%. So we've seen a big move. By the way, did you see Simon made a move on Troutman this morning?
No.
Yeah.
$4 billion.
Yeah, they looked at that 20 years ago and walked away from it. So it's a big, big mall merger. But back on topic here, preferreds. So a preferred ETF is a 5.25 today. So one strategy is to look at preferred stocks. Preferreds tend to move more correlated with interest rates.
Yep.
But investors do have a little bit more of a bump. What are the risks in preferreds?
You've got the subordinated rank there. Much of these preferreds coming out of your financials are junior subordinate, so they're behind.
Yeah.
All sorts of.
They also don't have to pay you.
Right.
Yeah.
So if these are levered companies and they get in a cash flow pinch, the preferred can either be cumulative or non-cumulative. If you don't get paid, you don't get paid. So it has a higher risk associated with it, and they're also less liquid.
Less liquid. Need to look for call structure as well. I think a lot of investors overlook that, and you may think you're getting a yield, but they get called and refinanced out, and you get much lower.
Yeah. We may have to break this into two parts given the time frame here, but let's touch on closed-end funds quickly. So the closed-end fund universe, so the difference between an open-end fund and a closed-end fund, both are registered investment companies under the 40 Act. The open-end fund is continually offered. The closed-end fund has a set number of shares and trades on the exchange. So the underlying assets, the net asset value, can differ for a closed-end fund based on how it actually trades in the exchange. And a closed-end fund can, the pool of assets, the collateral for it, can be equities, preferred stocks, investment-grade bonds, high-yield bonds, any number of things. But investors typically go to high-yield bonds as a way to increase yield, because the difference between a high yield or a closed end fund and an open fund, is a closed end fund can leverage its pool of assets up to 40% based on the RIC rules. So the one of the largest funds is BlackRock's Corporate High Yield Fund. Its ticker is HYT, has a yield of an 8.17 for investors today. Compare that to the JNK yield of 5.45.
About 5.5, yeah.
Yeah, that's a substantial yield. So now we're back into that 1996 category.
But then you're introducing the leverage risk and also a much higher expense ratio than the ETFs.
What's the risk on leverage? Why would investors be concerned about that? So we've had, I mean, this is, we're numb to it because it's been just a bull market. All assets have gone up. Leverage works both ways. So when credit deteriorates, not if credit deteriorates, but when it ultimately deteriorates, we will see the pool of assets we'll have to sell in order to meet the ratios required by the lender. And so the forced sale of assets from the pool all at one time, by the way, this is happening across all different asset pools, inevitably weakens pricing, right? So it works both ways. So when the deterioration happens, it happens very, very quickly. And the deterioration, the price volatility on this can be pretty rapid. So it's got a higher volatility associated with it than just unlevered pools of assets, right?
The other two things I'd add in is we've seen this with a couple other funds that hit this scenario, they hit this wall, and what you're left with is what do they sell? They sell the most liquid stuff, and you're left with even more of the junk.
Yep.
And then those funds end up closing, and you're redeeming out of it for the next 3 years. I'm trying to think of that one fund. It was a high yield that blew up about 3 years ago.
It was the
Third Avenue.
Yeah, Third Avenue.
That problem, and I think investors are still
heavy energy.
Getting distributions.
A lot of illiquid energy credits.
So you're not guaranteed to get your money back in a timely manner.
Which, by the way, Adam, that's a great point, because where you see these high yield funds, they tend to have an overweight to certain industries, and energy is one of them. So they have a different risk appetite. We think they're all diversified, but in fact, they have correlated risk because they're concentrated in certain sectors. Hey, given our time, you guys, let's close down for the week, and then we'll pick up business development companies and other strategies for income next week as well. Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.